the myths and stereotypes that surround it.
What is the history? How was this organization established?
Dignity itself was established 10 years ago because of a need for gay ministry. Up until that point, traditional churches were ignoring the gay people within their congregations or outright telling them you're a sinner or you're sick or whatever and excluding them from church life. And because gay people are no different from anybody else, they have religious needs, and it was felt that some type of organization needed to exist for gay people. Mm-hmm. And this is how Dignity came about, and Integrity had similar roots.
Mm-hmm. This is a national organization, and you are the local?
Up until about, I guess, a year ago, they were national organizations. Now they're international organizations because there are chapters throughout Canada, Mexico, France, various other countries. So it's a growing worldwide movement. And we're a local joint chapter. We were the first chapter to be a joint chapter of both organizations. Mm-hmm. And we began in 1975. Mm-hmm. And just celebrated our fifth anniversary on September 7th.
Can you estimate the membership internationally?
No, but the traditional Kinsey findings of about 10% of the population who is gay or lesbian, on a worldwide scale, that's an awful lot of people.
Yeah.
And those that are involved in Dignity Integrity is an even smaller percentage. So I really wouldn't have any idea of how many internationally are involved in the organization.
How many locally then?
Locally, we have about 60 to 80 people attending Mass every Sunday. We hold it at St. Luke's Church downtown at 5 p.m., followed by a coffee hour at 6 p.m. And we have about 300 people on our mailing list. We publish right now a bi-monthly newsletter. And so we have quite a few on our mailing list that are interested in gay ministry.
You indicated earlier the fact that the organization is made up of, I guess, Dignity is for the Catholic.
Right, and integrity for the Episcopalians, right.
You don't exclude
no,
any other?
No, okay. If someone who is a Methodist or even a Mormon or whatever, and they have religious needs, they're welcomed into our community because there are organizations for gay Methodists and gay Mormons, but not in Rochester.
Oh, there are?
Okay. Yeah. And in fact, there's an organization called Metropolitan Community Churches, which, maybe I should explain the difference. They're a denomination unto themselves. I guess that would be the closest approximation to a gay church. We're not a gay church. We're more or less of a caucus working within the Catholic and Episcopal churches. So there are other organizations for specific religions, but right now here in Rochester, we're about the only religious organization for gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And I might add that we don't exclude non-gay people. They're welcomed into our church just as much as gay people are. And so it's open to anyone who seeks a better understanding of homosexuality and gay ministry.
What are the services and programs you provide?
In addition to providing for the religious needs of our gay and lesbian community and towards educating members of the church, we also provide pastoral and peer counseling for anyone who would like it. We provide that counseling for their family members who are trying to come to terms with the situation. We maintain a gay religious library. We have regular social activities, potlucks, educational forums every month on the third Sunday of the month, and We do various social outreach. We help organizations like St. Joseph's House of Hospitality and Mary House and Bethany House for women. And we're in the process of sponsoring a gay Cuban refugee couple. And we're also in the process, it's in its initial stages right now, of reactivating the Parents and Friends of Gays organization, which is an organization geared towards helping parents and friends of gays understand their gay relatives better.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say Mass takes place at St. Luke's.
Right.
On St. Paul's Street. Is that where you're headquartered?
Yeah, we have an office in St. Luke's Church on South Fitzhugh Street. And it works out very well. We're an ecumenical organization. A lot of people who are Roman Catholic figure, well, why should I be going to an Episcopal church? But the Mass generally is a Roman Catholic Mass. But occasionally we do concelebrate Masses with both Episcopal and Catholic priests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We've been around for 5 years. Why have you kept such a low profile?
I would think that some of the best work that can be done is through, I don't know what else to call it, but silent education, not rocking the boat too much, because it is an emotional issue for a lot of people, and we prefer to work slow and steady in helping people to understand the issue rather than coming out with banners and proclamations and so forth. I think sometimes that's the best way to go about it, is a slow and steady path.
Do you find that that's been helpful?
Yes, it has. A lot of people in the non-gay community and a lot of people in the church, I'm sure, appreciate the fact that we haven't made too many demands all at once. We do have specific goals towards helping the church to understand us, but I think that they appreciate that we've been fairly intelligent about the whole thing.
What are those goals, and what is your relationship with the diocese?
Okay, some of those goals are, as I said before, helping the church to understand the issue better, and I think as far as our relationships go with the church, with the Catholic diocese, we have a liaison through the Division of Special Ministries. And with the Episcopal Church, we have a Episcopal priest working with us. He is dealing in homophile ministry, among other things. And it's a very cordial relationship with both dioceses.
Homophile?
Homophile.
Explain that.
Okay, homophile is another term to refer to homosexual. A lot of people in the gay and lesbian community don't like the term homosexual because it limits us as just sexual beings, which we're not. Just as heterosexual people are not just sexual beings. There's sometimes a great difference between a sexual orientation and an affectional orientation. And whereas people, when you refer to them as a homosexual, they would immediately think, aha, sex, and that turns a lot of people off. Homophile deals more with affection and love and caring, and that's what one of the major differences is between heterosexual and homosexual people, is who the object of their love is. And we do love just as anybody else loves.
As you say, this is a very emotional subject. I'm wondering, what response do you give people who might come up to you and question the fact that how do you justify your existence when the Bible says that homosexuality is a sin? And
okay,
what do you say?
Read the Bible again. At first glance, the Bible seems, if you want to translate it literally, would seem to say homosexuals are sinners. The sex act between homosexuals is sinful or sick or perverted somehow. But theologians who have given careful scholarship to areas like Leviticus and Romans and Corinthians and Genesis and so forth, have found that what, for example, in Leviticus, the passage that says man shall not lie with mankind and woman shall not lie with womankind, is not a direct condemnation of homosexual love, but rather has to be seen in its historical and cultural context. And in that time, it was quite common for the tribes that surrounded Israel to sodomize prisoners that were taken. And to sodomize a man was the ultimate humiliation, because that would be like treating him as a woman, and women at that time did not have that much value in society other than for procreation. And for something like that to take place was seen as an utter sin. But homosexuality at that time is not as it is now. Many homosexuals now form long-lasting, enduring, and caring relationships. And there's a difference between whether you're looking at homosexuality back then and homosexuality today. And that's one of the basic reasons that we don't interpret the Bible literally. We don't see it as an unchanging blueprint for our life, but rather something that we can learn and grow with.
So it's a matter of interpretation, then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about procreation? The fact that God in the Bible, I'm not that familiar with the mm-hmm. Bible, but says that, you know, he encourages you to go out mm-hmm. and multiply.
Right. That's a good question, because a lot of people have trouble dealing with that. They see males and females, and the ultimate thing to do is for those two to join and procreate. But it seems like not everybody was born with that purpose in life. If you look at sex as strictly an act of procreation, then you can think along those lines. But if you look at it as an act of love between two people, then procreation for heterosexuals is an additional benefit, but is not the only qualification for love between two people. Sex can be expressed between two people as a loving factor in their lives.
Why hasn't it been acknowledged before then? The way you sound as though you're saying that it's there exists in this world heterosexuals and homosexuals, just as it exists different races.
Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't it been acknowledged before that there are different sexual preferences in the Bible and in the greater society?
Right. Basically because of our own oppression. Just as blacks allowed themselves to be oppressed by whites, that went on for decades and centuries. But we are realizing that we're not the big boogeymen that a lot of people say we are, that we're loving and caring people, and that we do have respect for ourselves, and we do have an innate worth and value. And I guess the whole thing started back in 1969 with the Stonewall Revolution among gay people. They were fed up with the whole idea of being said that we're the scum of the earth and so forth. And we began exploring ourselves and finding out what's good about ourselves. And it's a similar cycle as what black people went through. And we're starting to learn a lot more about ourselves, and we want to share that with a lot of the community.
Does homosexuality exist in other cultures? Other?
Yeah, and in various forms. I was talking with someone the other day who wanted to know about homosexuality, and you know, are there only homosexuals in America because you know, it's so open and discussed? But they exist everywhere. even in Russia, which officially says there are no homosexuals. It's a symptom of capitalist decadence. Whereas back in the 50s, during the McCarthy era, we were saying that homosexuals were communists. So they all have their little quirks. But in Russia, it exists, and it doesn't exist in the same way it does here, because single people are not allowed to live with one another in Russia the way they are here. So if you see a happy homosexual couple here, you'd get probably a good impression of homosexuals here. If you were to go over to Russia, where they're not allowed to express themselves the way we are here, then you'd get a totally negative image, I'm sure, of what a homosexual is in Russia. But it does exist everywhere, and it's something that's been with us for centuries. And it's not going to go away either, despite claims that people have about cures.
It's been said that homosexuality, that and other elements, contributed to the downfall of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that can be used as a qualifying factor for saying that any civilization has gone down the drain. There's a lot of reasons that a civilization, whether it be the Roman or the Greek Empire, declined. And mere acceptance of homosexuality is not going to cause the, we're going to call it American Empire, the American civilization, to go down the tubes. I don't think there's any basis in fact for that kind of statement.
My guest is Tim Sally, who is with Dignity Integrity of Rochester. Dignity Integrity is an organization made up of Christians who are gay, homosexual. Those terms can be used interchangeably, I am.
Yeah, it depends on where your mindset is. If a lot of people prefer to call themselves gay who are accepting of themselves and who realize that they are just as good as anyone else. Homosexual seems to me to be a very medical term coined by Kinsey or Freud, and it's, I think, a term that refers to people who are not yet into any mindset of being proud of themselves or feeling good about themselves. And the majority of people in the community prefer the word gay, just as the consciousness was raised among black people to be called black instead of Negro. So.
Now, the term gay doesn't necessarily, when you talk about a gay person who is male, can that also apply to female?
Yeah, gay is a very generic term that can be used as a blanket statement for both men and women, although women are aware of their differences from men. Just as feminists in the non-gay community have been aware of their differences with men, so have lesbians in the gay community been aware of their differences with gay men. And so a lot of lesbians prefer to be called lesbian rather than gay.
Have your arguments for existence been accepted, would you say, since...
They've been listened to.
Listened to.
Yeah, because we do have quite a bit to say.
Mm-hmm. As far as acceptance...
Acceptance doesn't come easy. It never does. When you're trying to educate the public, acceptance comes very slowly.
But you're patient.
We're patient. I think we've got God on our side.
How do you relate to other gay members in the community? Do you
other gay organizations
in the gay movement at all?
I guess you could say we're a part of the gay movement if you look at what the goals of the gay movement are. And basically, the goal of the gay movement is to help people to understand us better. And along with that, I think I should clarify something that a lot of people misunderstand. A lot of people figure, well, we're rocking the boat for nothing because we're guaranteed the same constitutional rights as anybody else. But we're not, because the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which protects people from discrimination in employment and housing and so forth on the basis of race, religion, sex, so forth, does not cover sexual orientation, which would refer to us. So therefore, it's is technically legal to discriminate in these areas against gay people because there's no provision within the Civil Rights Act which says, no, you can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. So we don't share the same rights to protection from discrimination as any other American does. So this is where we're trying to affect change. And we work with organizations like the Gay Alliance and National Gay Task Force and so forth when it's appropriate.
You become then advocates?
We assist in whatever way we can. If there's a need for financial contributions or a need for workers or whatever, we make an announcement during our mass, and anybody that's interested can get involved.
What would you like the laws to read? Would you like them to say, to add that last sentence on?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's important to have that. We're not looking for any special privileges. As I said, a lot of people think that we have the same privileges as others do, but we don't. And when we're asking for equal rights, we're asking for the same privileges written into law that everybody else enjoys. And to do that, I think the first step would be to have the term sexual orientation included in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And another area that can be changed is current immigration law excludes homosexuals from entering this country, known homosexuals from entering this country, or becoming citizens. And that poses a problem for a lot of our Cuban refugees who are gay, who have come to this country to escape persecution in Cuba. They can be resettled here, but current immigration law says that you're not to stay here. And so there's bills in Congress to help change that. And that's one of the things that we want to see changed.
Hmm. You spoke earlier about the fact that your organization is sponsoring a couple
mm-hmm.
that have come here.
Right.
Do you know of any others that are here that may need some service?
Yeah. What's happened is there's estimates anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000 gay and lesbian Cubans have entered the country on the Freedom Flotilla, and they've escaped for good reason because they face severe persecution in Cuba. They're even running into some problems in the camps because there's a lot of harassment from non-gay Cubans. And one of the things that we're trying to help is to resettle these Cubans within gay communities. And it's interesting that for the first time ever, a government agency, the State Department, has asked for help from gay organizations, and it's basically the gay religious organizations to help them with this problem.
Is that how you found out about this couple? Or?
Yes, we did. We did. We heard from the Metropolitan Community Churches, which I mentioned earlier, and they spearheaded the drive with the cooperation of Dignity Incorporated. And we found out about it and offered our assistance in sponsoring a couple. And so we're still waiting for them. They're supposed to be coming from Fort McCoy, I think it is, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So we're still waiting for them, but we're collecting food and clothing and arranging for housing, medical care, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. What do you see your goals as being in the next 5 years? Much the same as they are now?
Continued education, I would think, because even though the quote gay movement has been in existence since 1969, a decade is a long time, but as I said, education comes very slowly. And that's one of the continued goals, I think, of our organization is to help both the non-gay community and those within the church to understand us better.
Have you seen that you've made any as far as the gay movement as a whole, on a whole, made any progress in those 10 or 11 years?
Yeah, very definite progress with some major setbacks. We've been very fortunate to pass local civil rights ordinances in various places around the country, but that amounts to less than 50 localities where it became illegal to discriminate against people on the basis of sexual or affectional orientation. we've been fortunate to have some restrictions eased in employment in the federal government. I think it's now illegal to discriminate on the basis of sexual or affectional orientation within the Civil Service Commission. But things like the military are still off limits. Working in the CIA and the FBI, they still have restrictions against homosexuals because they think that we're a risk to blackmail. But if you're an openly gay person, there's no threat of blackmail. So I think those are areas where we'll be needing some extra educational work and helping to relax those rules.
Mm-hmm. One question I neglected to ask you, I guess I'll ask you now, we've got 3 minutes left. There is a fear expressed by the general community about the downfall of the family, mm-hmm. the family unit itself. You must hear some of that.
That's our major...
And homosexuality must be blamed,
for all kinds of social evils, yeah. That's one thing that we have to confront quite often, and I think... It's a logical assumption when you don't know anything about homosexuality. But when you begin to learn more about homosexuality, you see that we are parts of the family unit. We have parents, we have brothers, we have sisters, so forth. More than anything else, it's homophobia, which is the fear of homosexuality, the fear and misunderstanding of homosexuality, which can cause the breakup of the family unit, because when someone comes out to their family and says, I'm gay, and parents and brothers and sisters withdraw the love and understanding that they once had for that person, it can cause a breakup of a family. And it's that homophobia which is, I think, more of a threat to the American family than homosexuality can ever be, because a lot of homosexuals do exist in very good family relationships. And I think that when they say we're anti-family or anti-society, they're speaking out of their ignorance.
That's an interesting term, homophobia.
Yeah, it's been coined in the past couple of years.
We'll have to examine that at another time. We're running out of time here. My guest is Tim Salley. He is with Administrative Services for Dignity Integrity of Rochester. Thank you for being here.
It's been a pleasure.
This has been Minority Forum, a public affairs presentation of FM 101 WEZO. Minority Forum welcomes your opinions and will allow equal time for responsible rebuttal. We invite you to join us again for another interesting discussion on Minority Forum.